panel moderator. The subject this morning is going to be where do we go from here, but I'll let Paul Martin from the Miller Center sort of explicate that a little bit more fully. In case you don't know all our panelists, we have Don Mark here. He's the political director of the Democratic Party of Virginia. We have Charles Wilson and Councilor David Brown. We have Chris Dunler from the Alamo County Democratic Committee, who was also on Cynthia Neff's campaign. He was David Suski's campaign manager, and of course he also was on Denise Lunsford's campaign a couple years ago. We have Anna Scholl, who's the finance director for Tom Perriello. And we have Sarah Buckley, who is David Toscano's legislative aide and also the co-founder of the Charlottesville Almirall Young Democrats. So please welcome all our panelists, and we'll let Professor Martin get started.
Great, thank you. Thank you for inviting me to help moderate this. I've asked our panelists to talk for a few minutes each to give their broad thoughts on the topic of effectively, where does the Democratic Party go now?
Could you possibly stand up?
I certainly can. I'll give my own sort of very brief sense of some of the framing questions that I'm hoping that we'll be able to talk about a little bit. One of which is obviously the governor's race went badly for the Democrats in Virginia, losing by a very significant margin. But there's a couple of things that I wonder about, and I'm hoping that the panelists will be able to comment and think about. One of which is that I'm not from Virginia, and coming from out of
most
state,
most of us aren't.
Coming from out of state, my sense is that Virginia has a relatively unusual electoral system, and that the governor's race is off year, meaning that it doesn't fall on the congressional elections, it doesn't fall on the presidential elections. And the meaning that we take from a governor's election for the rest of those upcoming elections, I'm personally unclear about. The second is that Virginia probably has a very interesting and shifting political coalition raises a lot of questions about who votes and when they vote and who is mobilized and when they are, both in terms of region, age, race, education, and a variety of things that really make the difference between when elections are won and lost. And there's a few other things that we could talk about that are interesting as well, but I figured you were here partly or mostly to listen to the panelists and not to me, and I'll do my best to keep traffic moving at an appropriate speed. So we'll do a few minutes of each of the panelists, and then we'll open it up for a broader set of conversations and discussions, and try to help us think this through. I'm going to start all the way at the beginning with Sarah. If you could give us, you know, 2-3 minutes of your broad sense of where to go from here.
Over the past few weeks, I'm sure that we've all been having conversations among our friends about what went wrong in this last campaign. So I'm going to start with, literally from right now, what I think is the most important step for moving forward. And I really honestly think that this is the General Assembly session. I think that the most important thing that Democrats can do is to create a good narrative and a good feeling and perspective on Democrats across the state that will reflect well on our congressional candidates in 2010. To do that, I think that we had some discussion questions earlier about whether we need to compromise or whether we need to stand out, and I think that we need to have a good hybrid of both of those things. We need to show that we are the pragmatic, problem-solving Democrats that Mark Warner and Jason told everyone we were. But we also have to make sure that we have a clear opposition message that Bob McDonnell and his administration can't just, you know, steamroll us. We have to show what is wrong with the McDonnell plan and the Republican plan, and we have to show why a Democratic plan is better. Besides that, I'm also an officer for the Virginia Young Democrats statewide. I'm the vice president for campaigns. So one of the most important things to me is rebuilding both our student volunteer base and our student voting base, which I'm sure everyone knows fell off dramatically this past year. And I know that Tom Perriello's campaign is going to be working really hard on this because students were essential to his margin in 2008. But we are really going to start in January with developing training programs and developing field programs for our students so that we know how to get our volunteers and get our voters out.
I would say that I think when you lose a statewide race by 18 points, there are a lot of things that you can point to that went wrong, that could have, any number of which could have been changed to lose by 5 points or by 10 points, but that all of which probably had to be changed to win the race. And I think that probably no one here is under any illusion that Cree was favored to win this year, that this was going to be an easy race. I think the first thing that I would point to is that the Cree that I have known for many years, and that I think a lot of you have known for many years, is not the Cree that ran for Gover. There was not a whole lot of message coming out of the campaign and not a whole lot of authenticity of who he was. And we can talk about, and I think we probably will, what that message should have been. But Bob McDonnell was going to be a jobs governor. He was a jobs governor when he started running. He was a jobs governor through the campaign. He was a jobs governor when we were talking about the thesis. And he was a jobs governor all the way through GOTV and on Election Day. And Cree was, I don't know, he was from a rural area. He wanted to talk about education maybe or transportation. Then there was the thesis thing. And in my mind, it was sort of like watching a bad repeat of the Kerry campaign in 04 when they jumped from message to message and didn't necessarily wait long enough for one thing to work to see if it had any traction, and that's what you wanted to move forward on. And I think that's really something to think about going forward, both for what we do as a community and as Democrats to help our candidates and for the candidates running, that there's not a whole lot that we can do as the people on the ground to push our candidates forward if we can't tell our neighbors why we're supporting the candidate and why we think that they're the best person for Virginia and to govern for us. And I heard that a lot from people this year, that one of the things I've heard from friends in Northern Virginia is that everybody thought that Cree wanted to bring guns into schools. And that's not something I ever recall hearing him talk about, but it's something that Republicans pushed out and we didn't have any response to. You know, down here, I voted for Cree, I volunteered for Cree, but I didn't really have a concise, you know, this is why I'm voting for him, to talk to friends, to say, you know, you should come out, you should vote, you should volunteer, whatever. And that's something that I think trickles down from the campaign and from the party and everywhere, that the candidate has to have a concise message and a reason why they're running, and that has to get communicated to the people who are on the ground talking to voters. And there are a lot of reasons for that failure that I think we'll probably get into. But for me, that's one of the biggest takeaways from this year.
So the question, as I hear it, is... Oh, I thought I'd be loud enough on my own.
Give us your names again as you stand up.
Yeah. I'm Chris Dummler.
Thank you.
Nice to meet everyone.
Because they told us who everybody was, but we all can't remember.
Well, I'm Chris, and I think the question, as Sarah framed it, was where do we go from here? Do we stake out new ground, or do we compromise? And I think I completely agree with what both Sarah and Anna have said, and I think I'll frame this in terms of a number of polls that I've looked at recently, which kind of gauge the temperature of the electorate. I think one of the most important polls that I've seen in the last few weeks following the 2009 election was a poll that had Republican self-identification, i.e. the percentage of the American electorate that wants to identify themselves with the Republican Party, at a 26-year low. It's the lowest it's been since 1983. Only 20% of the American people actually want to call themselves Republicans. Yet in the same week, a poll came out that had the Republicans ahead in the generic congressional ballot for the first time since mid-2005, if I recall correctly. So that's 47% to 45% was that breakdown in the generic congressional ballot. That's 27% of the population that doesn't want to call themselves a Republican, but would rather vote for a Republican for Congress than vote for a Democrat. That block of the population is a block that cares about efficiency, that cares about getting things done, that doesn't like the fact that Democrats have toiled for so long trying to pass health care and having failed so far to pass health care. So as far as working forward and pragmatically solving problems, that's the chunk of the population that we need to reach out to when we do something. When we say, we have a plan to govern, we can govern, watch us pass this, watch us pass that. That's 27% right there that we can at least appeal to. The other poll was a poll that was done recently by the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, which Lloyd's son, Michael, has been doing fantastic work on. It's a great organization. And the poll they did, it was a week after Election Day, and they found 400 Democrats and 400 independents in the state of Virginia who did not vote in 2008. They called up and they said, did you vote? And if they said no, they then asked, well, what was your opinion of Cree Deeds? 80% of those people had a favorable opinion of Cree Deeds. 80% of them liked them. So that was perfectly low-hanging fruit. And then the follow-up question was, well, why didn't you vote? And 61% of independents and a higher percentage of Democrats said he wasn't progressive enough. He wasn't progressive enough. So these people would have voted from their couch. They were perfectly happy with Cree Deeds. They would have supported Cree Deeds, but they did not show up to vote. These are the surge voters. These are the Obama voters. And, you know, we're talking about things that the Cree Deeds campaign could have done better. I think one of their biggest mistakes in retrospect was trying to, on a field level, actively reach out to Obama voters, to surge voters, while at the same time not messaging to those people at all. They were messaging to independents. They were knocking on doors of Obama voters. And as a result, they were not internally reinforcing any of those messages to anyone. And so, to an extent, we lost both of them.
David Brown, I'm on city council, but I also have been involved with the the city party for a long time. I was city chair, involved with different campaigns. And I promised myself that when I spoke today, I wouldn't act old and cranky. But the problem is, I am old, and the fact is I'm cranky. And I'm cranky, and I'm also going to take sort of the prerogative of actually being someone who's been elected to something and has run and understands that when you're asked to respond to a specific question, you actually don't have to. So I'm going to narrow the focus of this question because I just want to talk about locally. I think we can talk all day about the big picture of campaigns and message, but I really think we need to talk about what we can do locally, because I don't know about anybody else, and I can't speak for the county, but for the city, I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed that Cree Deeds got fewer votes. We love Cree Deeds. I said, he got fewer votes than Tim Kaine. That's embarrassing. That speaks to something that we're not doing right. Now, there's a lot of things done right this fall. I was amazed at the energy and the work that was being put in to identifying new voters, to making phone calls, and to knocking on doors. And there's tremendous promise in that. And I would go to headquarters and I would see all these people working hard. The problem is I would go to headquarters and I wouldn't see anyone there I knew. Okay? And I know a lot of people in this town. And so somehow, I guess what I think is happening that we need to do a better job of is have a sense of community in the city of Charlottesville and the county of Albemarle, and actually together, of being a city Democrat and a county Democrat. I think as we move to embrace the new technologies and ways of getting out to vote, some of these things are great. You know, we don't have to sit in the polls anymore and watch who voted so we can call them at the end of the day. You know, the smart young people have said, well, why don't we just call them all in? It's like, oh, that's actually a really good idea. Let's do that. But we need to make sure we don't miss some things. It used to be that we would have the leadership of the campaign in fall elections with the city chair and the county chair. I don't believe that was so this time. It used to be if you were a precinct chair in the city and a precinct chair in the county, you came to weekly meetings to help make sure things went well on election day. That didn't happen this time. It's like, well, does that matter? Well, here's an example of how I think it matters. It used to be that we would sit around having these weekly meetings, and we talk about what do we need to do? And one question that always came up was, how can we reach the absentee voters? Well, at the precinct level, you actually know who's ill, who doesn't leave their house anymore, whose kids have now graduated high school and are off at college, and you can figure out, because you know all these people, how to reach them. I'm not sure what we did to reach absentee voters, but I don't think we did a very good job of it. And so I just think we can do a better job. And I'll give one other example, and then I'll sit down, because I am starting to sound cranky. This spring, I noticed that my friends in Albemarle County weren't at our pasta dinner.
What?
They were not attending the pasta dinner. They didn't get invited. Well, just to be fair, I didn't get invited to the county barbecue. Obviously, I don't think that was intentional. I don't think anyone wanted to leave my money at home. But it's the first time I've missed the county barbecue in 20 years because I didn't know what happened. And I think that we need to make sure that as a city and a county, that we see each other often enough. So let's make sure our offices are in the same place. Let's make sure we're bumping shoulders regularly as city Democrats and county Democrats. And let's make sure we have a sense of community that takes a lot of pride in how we do in the fall elections.
David, can I ask you a quick question to follow up? Can you compare your sense of 2009 and 2008 in terms of those basic organization issues?
Well, 2008 is a really unfair election to compare anything to, because every single person voted. It was amazing. One of the things I did when I ran for city council, because I had run a soccer organization that was based in public housing, is I registered a whole bunch of public housing residents to vote. Well, I would look, you can get a who voted list and you can see who voted. Very few of these people I knew, even though they told me they would love to come vote for me, actually bothered to come vote. I saw all of them at the polls this past election day. So I think that, I don't think we get too far. And why you brought it up, something else I'm cranky about. I think, we have to be careful not to spend too much time trying to make sure that we hold on to the presidential year voters and the new voters at the expense of not doing the things we need to do to make sure we, and I think this reinforces some of the things that I think Sarah in particular was saying, that we reach the voters we know we have. We just have to make sure we reach out to them, have them realize it's important to get them to the polls.
Well, I'm Don Mark. I just feel old and cranky. I'm the political director at the State Party, and when I was thinking about this driving down here, about where do we go from here, I think people have to keep in perspective, the fact that we still have maybe the most popular statewide politician, incumbent in Mark Warner, around the state, who, no matter what time of the year it is, no matter what vote has just happened, he's at 65% in Virginia as an approval rating. Tim Kaine, I think, is going to leave with a 57-58% approval rating. Jim Webb is still, 50, I've seen 52-55% approval rating. So we still have a lot of leadership. We have a majority for the first time in forever in our House of Representatives, our congressional delegation, I should say, 6-5 that we won last year. And so when I think about where do we go from here, I think a little bit more, short term, is that, this coming year we have a couple of crucial seats that I don't have to tell you guys about, because you live in one of them, that we need to hold on to. And I think when we talk about federal issues again, and we go into the 2010 elections, people's memory in politics is somewhat short, but people will remember that the representation they had under Virgil Goud is nothing compared to the representation that you all have now under Tom Perriello, somebody who's willing to go out and work really, really hard for you, rather than somebody who, just kind of goes around to football games. and we got to look at redistricting, and just from a purely political standpoint, people will talk about, we're going to get drawn down to, 20 less seats, and it's all doom and gloom because the Republicans, control the House of Delegates and have the governor's mansion. But people also should take a look at the numbers and realize the Republicans drew the lines in 2001. And also, our voters have spread out a little bit further. If you take a look at Northern Virginia, we've moved away from the Beltway out into, Prince William County, Loudoun County, even in parts of Stafford County. Although they weren't too favorable for us this year, if we can activate those folks again, we have a formula for success out there. So they can't really draw us into, worse districts than we have now. So, going into 2011, we need to make sure that we're still organized, even though we don't have a statewide race for 2010 and 2011. But also looking back on this year, people have said before, when you lose by 18, it's not just one or two things that you could have changed. Everything was going against us, it seemed, this year. Whether it was, starting off, in a very, very tough primary, the Deeds campaign spending down to zero, having to, lose 3 months and fundraise, to get up to the point where, you know, we were operational. Also, you know, with the coordinated campaign that you guys, you know, work so hard for and go to the offices to phone bank and things like that, you know, we couldn't get those up until, you know, August, because we just didn't have the infrastructure or the money in place. And so, you know, I hate to blame it on one thing or another, because it's not just one thing or another, but, you know, we started a little bit behind the eight ball this year. Bob McDonald was able to go out early, be positive, create a message, and just sort of go with it. And I was talking to Dick before, and, you know, he had all this outside money and was able to, you know, have other people go negative for him, where we didn't have those kind of groups step up to the plate for us this year. And, you know, it was just sort of a perfect storm. And the Republicans were definitely more energized. And, you know, they might have won this year, but it's also nice to think that, you know, for the last 10 years, we're still 6-1, the way I look at it, in statewide races. And so, you know, the Virginia Democratic brand and the and I think our base is still there. We just had a bad year, you know, and I always see it as, you know, we just need to pick ourselves up, dust ourselves off, and then move into the next election. Take everything that we learned that went wrong and some of the things that went right this year, make sure that we incorporate it into next year and move on that way. So.
Let me take the prerogative as first question person, and then we'll open it up to other folks. There's a lot of recurring themes in terms of what people are talking about, even with David's contrary sense of local. Part of the idea also is that whoever's at the top and whoever's setting the issues will make your job either more or less difficult for getting people out at the local level to do the organizing. And so I wanted to start with, back to Sarah, arguing that we have to create the correct narrative, and I was hoping that you could give us a sense of what would that be?
I guess I can speak from a student perspective, which is kind of where I've been working for the past 5 years. And I think the correct narrative for students is short and sweet, and you know, to be simple about it. You need bullet points, and you need progressive bullet points. I think that as much as I love Cree Deeds, and I'm fine with him not being as progressive as some of our other statewide candidates, the poll that Chris cited is very true, and I think that's very true for students. If everybody else in the state was not energized, students certainly were not energized. Part of that, and part of that I feel more in tune with and felt like we had more control over, is a field operation, is a voter registration operation, which I heard some people talking about in the front row, that we just didn't have. And we need to be able to take a message that is forward-looking on healthcare, on the environment, on jobs, because honestly, our graduating class, my graduating class last year, was facing the worst economy and the worst jobs market ever. These are issues that are really salient with students now, but it has to come out in really brief, nice sound bites, because we also don't have a lot of time. That's the sort of thing that gets students energized. And I think that if we can get back to that sort of message, then we'll have a lot easier time convincing them to come out and vote for Democrats next year.
I think there's sort of complementary messages coming out of the General Assembly this year and also for Tom's reelection race, that Virginia has a really strong tradition of fiscal responsibility, and voters thus far in state races really respond to candidates, to Warner and to Kane and to Webb, who really demonstrate that they're going to keep our fiscal house in order. And I think that's something that ties into the economic message, and that Democrats in the House of Delegates can really work to reinforce this year, that, you know, Democrats led Virginia to be the best managed state in the nation. They protected our AAA bond rating, and they're not going to stand for Bob McDonald to raid the general fund, to take money away from education, to pay for transportation, for financial shell games that, you know, aren't going to preserve the sort of economic climate that we have in Virginia that creates jobs, that attracts business. And that's, I think, an overarching message that a lot of things fall under. You need to have a good economic system to attract businesses. You need to have a good educational system to attract businesses. It's about quality of life, and I think that's something that Democrats have argued and can continue to argue they have done a good job of protecting and promulgating, and it's a legacy that we should work hard to protect against the Republicans in the House and against Bob McDonnell. And I think for Tom this year as well, the economy is going to play a big role in the reelection. It's really hard to talk to voters about even a healthcare bill or an energy bill when they don't have jobs. You know, large swaths of Southside have double-digit unemployment, and I think what Tom is doing to help people, to help them get jobs, to help them stay on unemployment, to help them purchase a house, whatever it is, I think that it all falls under that economic message, which is sort of simultaneous to the other way that I think we really talk about Tom's reelection going forward. And what he's doing to help people is that, you know, Tom Perriello promised he was going to work a double shift in Congress for you guys, and he has held up to that. He is in the district every weekend, you know, putting 1,000 miles on his truck, visiting communities, talking to people, holding 100 hours of town hall meetings, and he's there listening and talking to you. And you may not always like how he votes or what he says, but he's always going to be honest with you about education, about the economy, about transportation, about healthcare, about all of those things. So.
Yeah, I don't have too much to add. I completely agree with both Sarah and Anna. I'd just like to make the point that there really is, it is not mutually exclusive to both have a message of pragmatism, to actually talk about the economy, to talk about transportation, to talk about things in easily digestible sound bites too, it doesn't matter, but at the same point, to merge that with a progressive vision and to actually reach out to both spheres of the population, the portion of the population that doesn't have a job, or the portion of the population that does and is concerned about their taxes, while at the same time appealing to students, to surge voters, these Obama voters, these people that will come out if there is the right message tuned in the right way. And I don't think that there is anything, it may be a little more difficult, a little more simple, depending upon the national climate, depending upon the issues that are important in that cycle, but there is nothing intrinsically stopping you from making both of those messages at the same time in a way that appeals to both those subsections of the population.
Can I add a sub-question for our last two folks here?
Before you get to him.
No, because I think it fits together. Don is responsible for the whole state. David and other folks in Charlottesville and in the county are responsible for the county. And our small island is different than a lot of places. And so one of the hard questions is how do we sort of help a broader coalition, not just do what we need to do, but pick the right candidate or I'm not sure if the line idea is to fall in line, but I was hoping that you could sort of add that twist to the broader questions.
Well, I think it's kind of where I was going to go to try to answer this anyway. I mean, I agree in the sense I think we have to have some clear kind of value-based themes as candidates, and I think, you know, competence, straightforwardness, transparency. But I worry about us doing what I see the Republican Party doing right now, which is the Republican Party has an element that says if you don't take positions that are over here with us, we are going to run against you. And for those of us that have been around for a while, that's what the Democratic Party did nationally in the 80s and early 90s in terms of having platforms, national platforms that had very specific items in them and that we expected our candidates to agree with. And that caused us to become smaller and appeal to a smaller group. So I don't think it's as important, I don't disagree with the polling in terms of who didn't vote and what we could do more, but I don't think it's as important that we run progressively as it is, even though I love progressive candidates, as it is that we run kind of with a clear message. Now, there's a challenge in that. And the challenge is, and I think Chris brought it up, is reducing things to sound bites and being straightforward at the same time is kind of impossible because most issues don't reduce to sound bites. You know, you're leaving something out if you just say you're going to reduce taxes or if you just say you're for this or you're for that. So So to get to the question of how do we take our local uniqueness and what lessons of what we do that can apply broadly, I will say that I think that we as a community somehow have figured out how to recognize that. You know, and an example is, even though we didn't realize how extremely conservative he was, Virgil Good was elected here as a Democrat, and we supported him. And he got a lot of Democratic votes in the city because he'd come through the process. We nominated him. You know, I don't think we really knew what we were getting. But the fact that he wasn't as liberal as Charlottesville, I don't think really hurt him in terms of getting that. You know, L.F. Payne, great congressman for us. Not the most liberal person in the room, but we gathered together and you know, once we had it, we worked hard to make that happen. I don't know if that actually answers your question.
No, I think
at least it wasn't cranky.
It wasn't cranky.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I mean, when you take a look at the whole state, and you look at Democrats from each part of the state, they all voted for Obama last year, they all voted for Mark Warner, but when you take a look at it, you know, Rick Boucher Democrats down in Southwest are a lot different than Arlington, Alexandria Democrats, and Moran Democrats in Northern Virginia. But I had this bumper sticker on my desk from a long time ago. It said, you know, all things considered, vote Democratic, and had social justice, you know, healthcare reform, and all these different points that we had. And I remember a couple of years ago, it was a lot easier for us. It's always easier for people to run for something than it is to governing is always a lot harder than running. As tough and as long hours as the campaign is, it's a lot tougher to govern and get a consensus and then get something through, get something passed, especially when you're in a body with, you know, 434 other people, or in a body with 99 other people. So it becomes a lot more difficult to actually do the work and get something through that you might have envisioned when you were running for something. But, you know, if you take a look at the messages we've always had statewide, that Mark Warner ran on, that Tim Kaine won on, that Jim Webb won on, it was sort of these basic fundamental things that we're going to balance the books because the Republicans have let this get way out of control. We are going to make sure everybody gets treated fairly, and we are going to make sure that everybody has a say, that we're open with the process, that people know, and we're more accessible than they are. So I think those themes still ring true for our folks. I think we just don't do a very good job of explaining it because, well, you know, and before too was the major criticism when we were, you know, in the early 2000s when we were down a little bit of we couldn't put, you know, two sentences on a bumper sticker of how we felt when the Republicans would just say, you know, no car tax or something like that. So I think we need to do a little bit better of a job now with that and organizing, again, around issues rather than just candidates and ideas. And this is why it's crucial to have a Democratic Congress in a broader sense than it is, you know, your specific congressman voted for this. But this is why it's important for Democrats to be in power. And then, you know, and so much of the party and our candidates is, you know, perception that's out of our hands. It's what people think of Obama. You know, if he's popular, we're popular. If he's, you know, passing legislation, people have a favorable view of him. If independents like him, then we are, you know, we are in good shape. But if you see independents start to sour on him a little bit, they're gonna go anti-Washington, whether you run for, you know, Board of Supervisors or whether you run for governor. It's just going to be tough to run with a D next to your name if the president's not popular. And it was the same thing for the Republicans when Bush was in office. It was easy to run on his coattails, but it's been, you know, after 2005, you know, it was so easy just to run against Bush and then just tie whoever you were running against with them because, you know, they shared the same, you know, fiscal strategy. They, you know, support the same kind of social programs or social agenda, that kind of stuff. So I think a lot of our success depends on how successful the president is, and so that's why it's really, really important to organize not just around your candidates, but, you know, support the president's agenda where you can, support, you know, the Democratic brand and some of the other folks. But organizing around ideas, I think, is key moving into these the next couple of years. Same way we did in 2006 and 2008 that we lost a little bit of sight of, I think, last year or this past year.
Let's go ahead and throw it up for questions.
I do think that the elephant in the room is what nobody has mentioned, that a lot of people were very discouraged who had voted for Obama, that we are still in these couple of wars, that we are running way into debt. Before we could run against Bush and Bush's expenses for their wars, I think that's why a lot of people stayed home. They still like Obama, but they're discouraged. And I just think that we have to worry about the issues, the larger ones. People liked Cree fine, but he didn't run a very exciting campaign. And people have to learn to vote against somebody. And that's what I put in my phoning. Nobody answered the phones, you know. That was one of the things that we really had trouble. That's why you didn't see more people down at headquarters, because nobody was answering the phone. They were discouraged and tired, and there's too much politics.
Anna, could you talk a little bit about, towards that end of the spectrum, we've heard lots of comments about moving more progressively. Is the problem not necessarily campaigns, but actually follow through in Washington right now?
I think that's true. I think there's a lot of discouragement with what's going on in Washington, and I think people were so angry at Bush and energized by Obama last year, and there was such a great sense of hope and change on Inauguration Day that it's really a letdown to come back to earth and realize that governing is a lot harder than saying hope and change and having it happen. Governing is hard work. Holding your coalitions together in D.C. is hard work. And I think there is a real disconnect between the negotiations that go on the Hill and the sense back at home that we have a Democratic president, 60 Democrats in the Senate, and, a 40-plus majority in the House, and we can't get a health care bill done. I think that it's not very easy to explain what the holdups are, but I think that if we can really get some things done by the end of the year and early next year, if we can get a healthcare bill through, if we can pass energy reform, if we can show that the stimulus is working, that some of that sentiment is going to turn around. And that's certainly not easy to do, but you're right that there's a lot of frustration that things aren't moving fast enough in D.C., and the argument that, you just need to be patient and wait a little longer is not very easy to swallow.
I would add to that a little bit as somebody who teaches political science courses for undergrads and whatnot. I think one of the mantras is the American political system was designed to be slow. And no matter who you have in office, the wheels just don't turn very quickly. You have multiple stumbling blocks that are constitutionally designed to make legislation difficult to actually move all the way through. And even when we have 60 senators in the Senate to block a filibuster right now, which didn't used to be tradition to run a filibuster for every small piece of legislation, you have a broad coalition in the Senate that is pretty far ranging, from senators in Nebraska to senators in California, and some of the folks in Nebraska are not so sold on the legislation. And so getting them to all sort of fall in line is so much more difficult than in the House. I worked for the House of Representatives for a short amount of time. I loved working in the House, even though we were in the minority at the time, but it was easy, you understood it. If you had the numbers, you could pass the legislation. Whereas the Senate, everything falls apart.
Well, and I would add to that too, that somebody said to me that holding together the Democratic caucus in the House pretty much is a bipartisan effort, because the Republicans have narrowed down their tent so much that they are so conservative and so right-wing that there is not a whole lot of breadth of ideology in their caucus, whereas in the Democratic caucus, you have the whole range from the Blue Dogs to the progressives that represent, 60-65% of the spectrum of where people are in American politics, and I think it's an underappreciated task that Nancy Pelosi has to hold all those people together and get them to agree on one thing.
And if I could add just real quickly, I think one of the things that we all look to have bipartisanship.
It seems like a really noble goal, but the reality is, in the state legislature and in the Congress, it just doesn't happen. I actually think one of the problems that Obama's had is because he tried too hard to make things work in a bipartisan fashion instead of just taking his base and trying to go ahead.
Question here?
Yes. My question is directed at Sarah and at David. David, you said that you had registered quite a few voters in low-income housing, and Sarah, you're part of the university, which I don't know any of the student totals. What I want to know is, from both of you, what percentage of the groups that you represent and the people that you registered, how many of them were Afro-Americans? And the statistics out on the Obama campaign and the election was that 95% of Afro-Americans voted in this past presidential election, which I don't know about the rest of you, but I stood up and cheered and stand on my head, because I've been in politics off and on for a while and here with the county Democrats, and it's just hard trying to get Afro-Americans out to vote. That's why I'm interested in what percentage both of your groups represented. And since the Obama campaign and Afro-Americans were energized, it's very hard to get them in on politics, and this may be something to sort of hold them. But do both of you have any ideas as to how to get more Afro-Americans in the party? And people have asked me, and it's hard, so I just want to know your views on that.
I can't give you percentage broken down by that kind of demographic. In 2008, on UVA's campus, we registered over 4,000 students. And you can see that margin in the precincts of the voter, in voter turnout. Venable more than doubled. U-Haul more than doubled. All of the student precincts just completely outperformed every other precinct in the city and the county as far as the increase in the number of vote. And I guess the only way I can really address your question is like how we targeted our voter registration efforts. It was really a constant presence on key places on campus rather than a group-specific effort. So our targeting for turning out African Americans was not really an issue. We are really more concerned about students as a larger group. That said, 2008 was the first year that the University Democrats did programs with the Black Student Alliance. And both groups really reached out to each other to help put on things. We put on two different rallies, and the leadership in the Black Student Alliance was very involved in our efforts, very involved in Who's for Obama, which was a separate organization.
I'm sorry, mm-hmm. Those statistics are good, but I guess what I'm asking you is, you're reaching out to all the students, which is a good thing, but I personally want to know of the students that help you and come to your meetings and that volunteered, mm-hmm. did you get an influx of the Afro-American students? And I think you probably did, because once they realized that you had Afro-American running for president, you know, they wanted to work, and I'm hoping you did. And my thing is, if it's been so hard in the past to try and get them out, it's going to be even harder as we go on. But hopefully, before that energy and enthusiasm fades, the Democratic Party does something to pull them into future elections. Mm-hmm.
And I guess what I'm trying to say, the University Democrats, I graduated in May, but the University Democrats, when I was president, is a very white organization, and in 2008 remained a very white organization. A lot of the African-American volunteers were pulled into Who's for Obama, or pulled directly into the Students for Obama office. So we, as a club at UVA, have been struggling with the same problem that the Democratic Party here has, mm-hmm. which is, how do you reach out to African-Americans to join your organization? And I think that the essential awkwardness is, oh, you're black, so you should be a Democrat, right? Come out and help us out. What we did was try to breach that gap by working collectively with black organizations so that we kind of were pursuing a common goal, but it was harder to fold the memberships together. And I guess the success that we had in folding organizations is going after things like voter registration. The Black Student Alliance and University Democrats were part of a voter registration coalition that staked out tables every day of the week to register students. And I still haven't answered the question about how to actually fold them into a Democratic Party structure rather than just working with them.
Well, I think the question is a really important one. And I think the people here who have been involved in the City Democratic Party and the County Democratic Party, too, I suppose, remember when events in the City Democratic Party were the most integrated events in Charlottesville.
Yes.
You know, it used to be that the dinners we had at the Greek Orthodox Church, you know, that it was a very vibrant, integrated organization. And I don't know if I have the answer to exactly how and why that has changed, but it's a big problem. I don't think it's impossible for us to get it back. And I'll just point to one event. Russ Linden organizes an event that as Democrats, for the Grace Tinsley Scholarship. The wonderful, very integrated event. So I think we need to figure out how do we make sure that as Democrats, it's not just mostly a white organization. To get to your question specifically about my experience, I think we need to separate race from income, because what I view is, you know, I probably registered 25 soccer moms, African-American, low-income women who had kids on the teams I was coaching, and very few of them ended up voting until last year. They were excited like everybody else about Obama, but I think if you just looked, and somebody like Lloyd will probably know more about this than I do, but if you just looked at voting participation by income, I think income may have as much to do about participation rates as race. The hopeful news on that end is I think currently we have several members of City Council, Dave Norris, Holly Edwards, who've been very engaged with the public housing low-income community. Work really hard on issues that are important to that community, and hopefully that'll make people who live in public housing and are lower income have a sense of why the Democratic Party in Charlottesville can be important to them.
The biggest complaint that I got when I was going door to door was from people who said, Cree's running a negative campaign.
Oh.
Over and over again, it was turning off our voters. And something I've noticed over the years is that the people who vote Democratic are motivated by positive impulses, whereas Republicans are often motivated by negative impulses. That bears very strongly on Tom Perriello's re-election campaign, because if we can get health care, get evidence broadcast that the stimulus is having a positive effect, if we can get evidence that his election in 2008 is bettering people's lives, that will give us the base to go door to door and to excite people. It's a very important thing to get that, and also to get that message that we've made positive progress. So that getting in legislation through and getting it implemented as quickly as possible are really key, so that we can begin to reinforce. I mean, if you look at the Obama campaign, it was essentially positive, and it inspired people. And going negative gets negative results.
Great comments.
There's a question back here first.
Yeah, I think that there's a more global issue here. I want to know why we are allowing Republicans to define who we are. I have a tremendous sense of frustration over the fact that we are not responding, and we're coming across as placators. In other words, whether you're for the public option or against
comments? Should we, all the way in the back to there?
Yeah, you know, I wanted to sort of respond to some of the things that Colleen was asking around the panelists were addressing. And I think one of them is, why do we get involved in politics in the first place? So many of us in this room are involved because we're passionate about it. It's hard work to go out there and make phone calls and knock on doors and do all the work of a campaign. If you don't have the passion, you're not going to do it. If you have things that especially are, you know, just sort of the everyday exigencies of life, you know, getting your children to school, getting food on the table, politics, involvement in politics is essentially a luxury because you're doing it in your free time. The only way that it becomes not a luxury is if you have a passion for it and you just feel so important that it's so important, or if there's an issue out there that affects your life personally. And I think one of the things that we saw, like during the civil rights era, was that there is a time when somebody's lives or somebody's life is being impacted personally, they're going to go out there and work for that. I don't know that the Democratic Party has something out there that makes people feel like, yes, if I go out there and work hard for this, you know, this will impact my life. So much of politics is emotional, and it's not necessarily that we can sit there and do some cost-benefit analysis and say, gee, if I get involved in politics, you know, I'll be benefited in this way. I think healthcare reform could be that thing. And I'm not sure what we've done to not make it. Instead, the Republicans have sort of gotten the passion of there. The Tea Party people have gotten the passion of it. We haven't gotten the passion. So how can we create that sense among people who don't have health care that this is something that's worth to go out there and fight for? I think if we're able to sell it in that way, and I don't know what the answer is, that maybe the people that we're looking for, those lower income people that David is mentioning, African Americans who have kind of dropped off the scene, maybe people will say, gee, this will impact my life, it will make a difference to me, and it's worth it to me to take the tiny little bits of time when I'm not out there doing something that I have to do in order to just live my life, to put into the Democratic Party. So that's just sort of something that I wanted to put out there as far as, I don't know if the panelists have an answer to that or if people just want to sort of think about it, but that's one of the things that I think.
Can I add to Patricia's comment? My sense is that she's not wrong, but that the political leaders can't do that, that they would get tremendous pushback if they told people to them directly, okay, don't spend your Medicare, or don't use the interstate, but that you and I can say that to people safely, and that is the role of sort of the people in the party to do that pushback.
And one follow-up to that is, as far as why things are taking so long, it took 8 years to get us into this disastrous mess. It's simple to use an analogy. When you break the glass, it takes no time to break it. It takes a long time to clean it up. And that's exactly the situation we're in now. But we're not creating this response. We're not saying this to people. Instead, what I'm hearing is, oh, Obama's been in office for a year. Why hasn't everything turned around? Well, it took us 8 years to get here. And I do not see the Democratic Party using analogies that people can grasp and understand.
Let me see if our panelists have comments on this. Otherwise, we'll go back to the floor. Comments?
You know, I think you make a really good point about it, is that we don't say it. I think we have Democrats who say it, but they say 15 different versions of that, and then they also don't say it enough. You know, one of the things that the Republicans are good on are they say things over and over and over and over and over until people start to think that maybe part of it's true, and then that part of it that it's true makes the biggest deal in the world. Like, I don't know if you remember, I was at the rally with President Obama, and both times he was in Virginia for Korea, he talked about the whole, you know, cleaning up the mess. I don't know if you guys heard the mop analogy. We said, well, you know, I don't want, you know, the people who clean up this mess, I've just got a mop, but now they're telling me to mop faster, I'm not holding the mop the right way. They should grab a mop. But it's, you know, one of those things where we don't, you know, he's the only one, you know, making that analogy. We're not doing enough of that. And I think that's a communications problem that we have, but it's, you know, unfortunately, it's a communications problem we also had, you know, say, leading up to the war, leading up to, you know, whatever else, during the Bush term, too. It's just that it's harder for us to put our ideas on a bumper sticker, where for them it's easier just to say no taxes, 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 you know, and throw in something here and there. And that's something that we successfully ran on was, you know, stop the war. But then when you get into office, you know,
you don't want to stop it anymore.
It becomes, no, it becomes tougher when you have the gut to do things. So, anyway,
there's a question in front, and then we're going to go back to the back table.
Okay, this is somewhat different. I wanted to address the issue of the coordinated campaign in this election. My sense, and having been involved in 2005 and then in this one, my sense is that there were a lot of problems with the coordinated campaign that suppressed voter turnout, and you know, there were those kinds of problems in however you understand those formulations of how those things, how that was developed. And there were also problems in terms of the integration of the coordinated campaigns with the local parties, at least here. That's my sense of it from where I stand, that was really problematic, and maybe one of the reasons why we weren't getting the same people out, you know, in the campaign offices, at least in the city where the office that I, you know, was familiar with. And I guess I'm wondering, you know, from you guys what you think about this and how does this get fixed? Because it seems like it was different this time than in 2005 in some real structural ways and probably ways that I don't even understand, but it seems kind of broken. And I don't know how to fix it, but a lot of resources went into this.
You know, I think a quick response is that we're unique. And I think that the statewide coordinated campaign really does have to, in a lot of part of the states, come in, create the organization, have a plan, and institute it. And I think that because Charlottesville and Albemarle have such strong organizations, I think it's we don't fit that model. And I think that I think that was where a lot of friction occurred this time.
I feel like this is a topic that we could have spent this entire morning on. And I'm afraid that I'm going to get really shrill when I talk about it.
Go ahead, Kate. Go for it.
I think the very first problem with the coordinated campaign is that they did not start until August. And whether that was a problem, as Don mentioned, because the creatives needed to spend 3 months fundraising or not, the Democratic Party of Virginia knew when the date of the primary was. And they knew that after that date, we were going to have one candidate that they needed to be working for on a statewide level. I have no idea why they had no structure planned. They had no staff hired to embark on this mission that they knew that they were going to have on that date. From a student perspective, the targeting for students done by the coordinated campaign was completely wrong. We found that here in Charlottesville, but talking with my colleagues from across the state, this was done statewide. People were sent to knock on the doors of residential, normal households where student-aged Democratic voters supposedly lived. Well, all of those student-aged voters were out at school when this was happening. Therefore, we were wasting canvassing hours going to households where people weren't actually living. And then we had no coordinated student effort or student strategy to actually turn them out. In Charlottesville, we had one organizer for the city of Charlottesville, and that was it. He was a great guy. He tried to learn as quickly as he could, but he turned to some of us who were veterans of the process to figure out a student plan. Unfortunately, that was a month from the election, and we had missed the voter registration deadline. We were very behind on our absentee ballot application deadline, and we had not been able to identify student voters who are very transient, even if they stay at the same university. You change addresses pretty much every year. We couldn't register them at their new addresses. We couldn't register new students who would come in for their first year, and then on election day, we couldn't turn them out. We did mount a very good effort trying to replicate what we did in 2008, and our vans and shuttles and visibility on grounds, we ended up taking about 150 students to the polls, which is about half of what we took, actually physically drove to the polls in 2008. So that was great, but one, students weren't really sure that there was an election going on because no one had been able to talk to them because we did not have correct targeting. And two, there was just like a wrong plan from the very beginning. Didn't start early enough and then executed the wrong plan.
Don, can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. And on the strategy stuff, you know, you were right on, I think. And One of the problems that the coordinator had was that, you know, like you said, it didn't get started around here till August, and there's a very simple reason for that. Nobody had any money to pay for it.
Well, they should have.
I would love if somebody came in and gave us all this money to start the coordinated a little bit earlier. The fact of the matter is, when you have a primary, it's almost impossible for the party to fundraise around anybody, because we can't just say, oh, well, we did, you know, send out emails, talk to our major donors, say, look, we need to get a coordinated campaign off the ground and running. And so we had a coordinated campaign director, a political director, and a couple field staff in house races, but that's all we could do with the money. And what we did during the primary was, do you guys remember the Stand Up for VA stuff, the $125 million of unemployment insurance that the House Republicans voted down during session? We did a lot of organizing around that. A lot of, you know, we were able to do things like get a tracker for Bob McDonnell, a couple of campaign infrastructure things. But the field doesn't really take off until you have a nominee, and a lot of what happens with the coordinated is done with the top of the ticket. So we worked very closely with the Warner and Obama campaigns last year, and this year we didn't have anybody to work with until June, because as you guys know, it was a pretty tough primary. Nobody knew who was going to win until about, you know, maybe the day before, when those public polls started coming out, and it was, you know, at that time sort of a crapshoot. And so it is tough for the party to fundraise around that. It is tough for when we have a three-way primary like that, for candidates not to spend down their money, because you got to win the primary if you want to run in the general. So, you know, I don't want to blame everything. You know, obviously the coordinator could have gone a lot smoother, but basically we had about 6 months to run a year-long campaign. And that's true, I think, of, you know, the Deeds campaign itself, which had a skeleton staff until they won and then needed to staff up very quickly. Political folks don't come cheap, so you got to raise the money to pay people. And you got to do all this in a very, very short amount of time. So, not to defend everything that went on, because clearly things went wrong, but that's just sort of the political reality of what happened this year. It's just the money wasn't there early on. The coordinated campaign in 2005 was able to get off the ground very early because Kane was going to be the nominee. The DNC was able to drop $500,000 to get it off the ground in February, whereas this year we didn't get our commitment. And not to say anything about the DNC, because they didn't have any money after the 2008 elections. We weren't able to get that money until August. So when things came into place, it was just sort of a short campaign cycle for us.
Let's go to the question back here.
Just to sort of build on what you were saying a minute ago, what impressed me about this campaign, or depressed me about this campaign, was that Democrats allowed the entire battle to be fought on Republican turf. We should have been, rather than talking about taxes, we knew Bob McDonnell was going to talk about taxes, we should have been prepared to talk about good governance. One is the flip side of the other. One is the Democratic frame, the other is the Republican frame. And Cree's response was to talk about taxes rather than talk about issues of good governance. Steve Shannon did the same thing. The Attorney General's office, believe it or not, really isn't top law enforcement officer in the state. Nobody would know that if you watched either campaign. But Shannon was playing in the Republican sphere of be afraid, be very afraid, whereas he could have talked about exactly the same issue. Amber Alert is a great example of how government can do good things if we come together to solve problems, and, you know, you sort of wrap it in a Democratic flag instead of the Republican, be afraid there's a criminal under every bed. And my concern is, and I'll point this towards Don being the sole representative of the state party here, is there something that we can do, and I'll add that this is a common problem for House of Delegates candidates and for state Senate candidates, we haven't tried to do anything to push this notion of democratic framing in our any of our campaigns. And so when every candidate from governor on down to the House of Delegates runs in this Republican frame and nobody is willing to articulate a Democratic frame, the result is we have skewed the middle of this debate so far to the right, nobody else would identify it as being a middle. The notion is that in a campaign, you try to persuade the middle. But in the long run, politics is about defining the middle. And we have allowed the Republicans to define the middle so far to the right, we can't even find it anymore.
We only have about 10 minutes left of our regular program, and I wanted to give the shift the conversation a little bit to the immediate needs of the broader question is what do we do? Right, we have an election in 2010 that is going to come up very quickly, and I wanted to sort of offer the floor to the folks who are going to be in that fight to try to give us a sense of what we should do now. And I want to tag on to that I think with Perriello in particular, he's going to need to do very much what you're saying. He needs to find a multiracial coalition because African-American turnout really delivers for the Democratic Party in ways that if African-Americans stay home, Democrats lose. And they need to find a very clear way to make that happen.
Well, I guess I'll talk about what the Virginia Young Democrats' plan is. We sat down a couple weeks ago to work out our budget and our program for the next year. This past year, we raised about $45,000, hired 12 organizers that went to key competitive House of Delegates races, which we feel were neglected by the coordinated campaign in the end, and a lot of whom went down with the negativity and that sort of messaging that we talked about earlier. But we hired 12 organizers. Those organizers and our campaign invasions bringing our chapters to these races knocked on 135,300 doors. And we did this in about the span that the coordinator was up. We didn't get our executive director in until July. There's a lot of potential for young people, and we want to take the lessons that we had from this past year and bring it into 2010. By first providing trainings and issue advocacy for our chapters to give them something to rally behind in this next semester when we don't have an election, so that people will be turned on for 2010 and people will already feel positive messages that make them want to volunteer for Democrats. Secondly, we are planning on hiring organizers again to work with the most competitive House of Representatives races. And our top priority is going to be the 5th District. We're going to use these organizers to implement a student strategy that our members are experts on because we live it every election cycle. We're going to be able to organize every campus in the district, every campus close to the district that we can pull volunteers from and bring into key areas. And using that, starting early with our voter registration and voter IDing on a student level and on a general level, we're going to be able to turn out the voters that we need to give Tom the margin that he needs to succeed.
I will happily disabuse anyone of the notion right now that reelecting Tom Perriello is going to be easy. When you win by 727 votes, there are probably 10 different, critical things that contributed to that victory 2 years ago, and there are maybe 5 of those that we can replicate this upcoming year. Tom is one of the most targeted Democrats in the country. He is the only freshman Democrat from a district that voted for McCain, who voted for the stimulus, who voted for the cap and trade bill, and who voted for health care. And I know that there are other pieces of legislation where he hasn't voted as a lot of people hope a Democrat would vote, but he has been there on the big things, and this is going to be hard. If you can give money, if you can knock on doors, if you can talk to your neighbors, if you can make phone calls, it's time to go. There is no time to sit around and, lick our wounds and cry about last year. Cree lost, and Cree lost hard, and it sucks, and it hurts, but that cannot happen again. People stayed home in November, and people didn't get energized, and we don't have that luxury this time around. There are 7 Republicans in the race, all of whom are raising money and working hard and talking to voters to try and kick Tom out of office. And having a Republican congressman again would not be a whole lot of fun. There are lots of institutional things that we can do to, you know, support the party committees and do all of that, but at the end of the day, you have to be engaged and you have to volunteer, and there is no other person to push it off onto. You need to talk to your neighbors, you need to make phone calls, you need to knock on doors. Other people aren't going to do it.
I wanted to just let everybody know that I promised Anna that she could get out of here before 11 because she has an appointment. But I didn't want, this is a great discussion, I didn't want to break the discussion up, so I wanted to let Anna go if she needs to go to her appointment. But
I'm good, I've got a few more minutes.
Okay. But I encourage people to keep on asking questions. And also, before you leave, remember we have to pay for the space and for the food, so there's a jar over there to put $5 in if you all wouldn't mind contributing. But please keep asking questions because I think this is a great discussion.
Can we finish up with the...
Yeah, I was going to say, Anna's completely right that, you know, that in 2008, 10 things went right, and we elected Tom Perriello. This last year, 10 things went wrong, and we lost by 18 points. The truth in 2010 is going to be somewhere in between. One of the potential benefits we have, or potential drawbacks, depending on how you view it, is that we don't know who's going to be running against Tom Perriello right now. There are 7 people, as Anna said, that are currently... they've thrown their hats in the ring. They're probably going to have a caucus. Hopefully, fortunately for us, you know, a caucus is a room. When you put crazy in, hopefully you get crazy out. I don't know what's going to happen exactly. But we should probably assume that we're going to not get stuck with a far-right challenger. We're going to get a moderate Republican, someone like Robert Hurt, someone who will force us to frame things in a way that isn't going to be the best frame we could hope for. Fortunately for all of us, as I'm sure everyone in this room knows, Tom Perriello is a fantastic politician. He's a brilliant man, and he's going to run a great campaign, but he does need the help of every single person in this room to make that happen.
I just think we need to strengthen our local system. I think it's that simple. I think we need to expect more from our committee members. We need to expect more from our precinct chairs and other officers, and we need to expect more from the chairs of the party. I think specifically some things I think we're going to do well is, you know, when I was party chair, we had an office and we had a staff. And so to be a precinct chair, there was someone who was there who could help you do that. We don't have that anymore. I think we're working on getting that back. But when we get that back, it should be someone whose primary function is to make sure that there is support for the city chair and the county chair. I think that we should have more events, and again, we have staff, we can make it work, that are like the Grace Tinsley benefit. You know, events that show that the entire community of Charlottesville, poor and wealthy, African-American, other minorities, white, that we all have a commonality of interest as Democrats and that the party is there for everybody. And third, this is my last cranky pet peeve, is we should make it feel like when you become a member of the city committee or the county committee that you're part of something. And right now, it's kind of like a secret. You know you're a member of the committee, but no one will give you a list of who the rest of the committee is. This isn't, I'm not exaggerating.
Or who your chair is in some cases.
And so, you know, in an era of open government, can you imagine if the city of Charlottesville established a committee and wouldn't tell anybody who was on the committee? You know, it's kind of ludicrous. Let's open it up. When you become a member, let's hand you a list of who's on the committee so that you can understand, oh, I have friends that live in JPA that are on the committee, and these people are friends of mine, and not have it somehow be interpreted that, oh, that's private information. We can't release to you a list of who the committee is.
I'll be very quick because I know we're coming up on 11 o'clock. But Dave said, local committees are the backbone of the party. We don't get to move and go if people aren't energized on the ground. And that starts with you guys. So, you know, when people are members of the committee or chairs of the committee, you guys own that. You guys own the Democratic presence in your locality. You know, we don't get signs up. We don't get, you know, all this stuff. You know, the buzz about our candidates going, if it doesn't come from you guys. You know, I don't have that big of a mouthpiece from the state party, so, you know, staff is pretty much irrelevant when it comes to, you know, how many people are energized on the ground to go and do something. So I'd say right now, organization is key. Make sure that, you know, when you have your list, you're talking with each other, you know what's coming up. And if you can, give money early to your candidates, to the state party, to your local committee, because that money goes a long, long way early in the campaign cycle. Also, just from the state party side, we've got a special election coming up on January 12th in Fairfax County. And if you guys think that, you know, special elections don't mean much, just remember last year the Republicans started off the year very strong in their special elections, knocking off a couple of our more Democratic seats, coming very, very close in some of them, and started to get them energized. So in between, you know, times now, we're going to be asking folks from all over the state, if you can, come knock doors in Fairfax. If you get a candidate in Virginia Beach who wants to run in a very, very tough district, we're going to say go down to Virginia Beach. We're going to, you know, ask you guys to do things earlier than you might be used to, but that's going to pay off in November. And I think that's what that's one of the lessons that we need to learn from last year, is that, you know, we had a huge election. People were tired. But in Virginia, we can't afford to be tired. We have elections every year, and all elections matter. So, you know, we need to, you know, kind of not get over last year, but to move on, take the lessons that we learned, and apply them this year in a constructive way, so we make sure that we hold on to our congressional majority.
We're out of time. I'm sorry if I didn't get to everybody's. I'm sorry I didn't get everybody's questions. There's a lot of folks, but I'm sure if some of the panelists want to stay around, we can have more informal conversations. And my job is to get you out of here.
Nice to meet you too. See you around.